Well, folks, you know what that sound means. It is 4:01 in a few seconds, and you, right here in Carbondale, Colorado, and you're tuned into KDNK. And today's episode of Everything Under the Sun, the Sopra Sun's weekly radio program on the best radio station in the world, KDNK. If you haven't already, you could find a newspaper up and down the valley at a yellow newsstand near you. You could also find it online at soprasun.com, and we reliably print every Wednesday evening, and the stands are on, or the newspapers are on the stands every Thursday morning. So pick up a fresh issue if you haven't already. We got a good, an important show for you today. We're going to be highlighting a column that was printed by Mr. Tom Cardaman, who's also in the studio with us, and he's a board member for Roaring Fork Safe Passages, a nonprofit founded in 2022 by Cecily D'Angelo, who should also be joining us by phone today. And this nonprofit is helping prevent wildlife collisions by doing studies and one day hopefully getting some brick and mortar projects done, some wildlife crossings. So anyhow, welcome, Tom.
Great to be with you, James.
Great to have you in the studio again. I think we were talking, we talked in the studio maybe a couple of years ago, and around the when Roaring Fork Safe Passages first came online.
That's right. We were just wrapping up the Watershed Biodiversity Initiative's study called the Roaring Fork Biodiversity and Connectivity Study, the Roaring Fork Watershed Biodiversity and Connectivity Study. And that's available to everybody in the community through our website, Watershed Biodiversity Initiative. And an interactive version is available on the Colorado Natural Heritage Program website under their CODEX, C-O-D-E-X, heading. And it's a little more sophisticated than what's on our website. But anyway, that's wrapped up. It's being used. It's the Roaring Fork Outdoor Coalition is a group that's using the science and data and mapping to guide their discussions about balancing recreation and natural resources and wildlife interests, and all of that, in a way, led to the Roaring Fork Safe Passages that Cecily was inspired to crank up.
Fantastic. And Cecily, are you there? Are you on the line?
Yeah. Can you guys hear me?
You're coming in loud and clear. thank you so much for joining us today.
Of course, and I should apologize because we left early due to the storm that's coming in this evening, and so now we are en route for our Thanksgiving, so you might hear some voices. But it's so great to be with KDNK. Absolutely love everything you guys do, and it is so fun to revisit this project. What is 2 years? No, sorry, 3 years later.
Yeah, 3 years.
Time has really flown. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, it's our pleasure, and thank you for joining while you're in group for Thanksgiving. We just really appreciate it, Cecily, and appreciate the good work that you're doing at Roaring Fork Safe Passages, because it's certainly nothing new that we, and Tom referred to it in his column, that we constantly see roadkill on the highways, and it's disturbing to see. It's sad. So thank you for the work that you're doing. We'll start off with that. First, if you could just give, I think we've given a bit of background, but just could you tell us what Roaring Fork Safe Passages has been up to these last 3 years since you launched in 2022. And if you want to take this one, Cecily.
Yeah, absolutely. Over the last 3 years, we have sort of tackled, we've really tackled this issue as you need to in order to get everything lined up to work with local municipalities, CDOT, and CPW. So the first thing that we did is we looked at the entire watershed, including Highway 133, and we looked at all of Highway 82, and we conducted a prioritization study. And during that study, we tackled sort of the issue of looking at where should we start. And through that process, we came up with six locations that we were able to identify as being sort of our high priority locations in the valley. And that is not to say that they are the only locations that need help, but they were really sticking out to us as places that not only had high rates of collisions, but also had future potential for solutions. So three of the locations have solutions that involve connectivity and potential sort of rehabilitation of the landscape over the highways. And then three of the locations are unlikely to be locations where we can do connectivity because of high development pressures, either current development or future development. But those areas were places where we were just seeing so much wildlife vehicle conflict that we felt that perhaps it would be a good idea to look at those locations and potentially put in some fencing, look at where the fencing ends, and just try to do our best job to reduce the wildlife vehicle collisions in those areas.
I'm interested. Can you tell us those high priority locations that have been identified first that may have some crossings?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So at Emma, so right at Emma, like between Basalt and Willis, Highway 133, and between the Aspen Airport and the sort of the entrance to Snowmass Canyon. Interestingly, Snowmass Canyon is also eligible for that, but they already have crossings. We just need to do a better job of the fencing there.
Okay. And then how about for, if you don't mind speaking to areas where there might be future development that would inhibit crossings potentially?
Yeah, so the areas around Catherine Store, Cattle Creek, and actually I sort of misspoke because the area, the third area is, Snowmass Canyon, and it already does have crossings. It's really just a matter of fixing what was perhaps not properly built in the first place or where the fencing might be down. So the third location, Snowmass Canyon, will have connectivity.
So I'm curious, also, just while we're on the subject and while we have you, I know you have some kiddos in the back seat there, but Cecily, there's been some headway on the, if I'm not mistaken, specifically on the section between the Aspen Airport and Snowmass. Is that right?
Yeah, so the section that we actually looked at there is between the Aspen, it's the end of the Aspen Airport, which really does, it does actually extend all the way to the Airport Business Center to some degree. And then it goes all the way to Aspen Village. And we sort of launched into that location first, partially because it was the location that had the most potential for connectivity. It's an area where there is it's an area where we have a lot of protected land and a lot of land that is not yet, it doesn't have the same pressures of development. And so we sort of jumped into that location because we saw in other places in the valley that the pressures from development are really making it so we can't we can't bring back that connectivity. Mm. And in a lot of these places, time is of the essence. Like, there's you either have to decide to do these wildlife corridors and to make them a priority in communities, or eventually you lose the ability to do that. And so we did jump into that long stretch because it has potential for multiple crossings that are all linked by fencing, which really gives us like an incredible network that we could put in place there.
Okay, great. And that has, there's been a report on that, if I'm not mistaken, the State Highway 82 Wildlife Mitigation Strategy. Airport.
Yes, that's correct. And actually, both these reports, the prioritization study and the mitigation plan for that section of the highway, these both live on our website. Everybody can access them at any time, and it's roaringforksafepassages.org. And actually, now we are launching into three additional locations for mitigation plans, which is at Emma, Highway 133, and Snowmass Canyon. So that, too, will be a process where we're starting to involve. We sort of started with a limited group of stakeholders, and we'll expand out to a larger group of stakeholders and really like public input. So please reach out if you want to be a part of the process as we launch into those three new locations.
Awesome. And for listeners, you could find that information again at goingforksafepassages.org. Cecily, you used the word connectivity, and could you define that just for our listeners?
I would say broadly, we're trying to, you know, knit back together these pieces of high quality habitat that we have throughout our valley, and creating the connectivity for the wildlife, so they're able to move from these different places that they either spend their winter or their summer habitat. It's all about creating the ability for the animals to move again in an unencumbered way that allows them to pass over the road without getting hit by a vehicle.
For our listeners, you are tuned into Everything Under the Sun, the Soper Sun's weekly radio program. We're about halfway through our show already. It goes quick. Today we're speaking with Cecily D'Angelo, the Executive Director of Roaring Fork Safe Passages, as well as Board Chair Tom Cardaman. Am I saying your last name right, Tom?
That's close enough.
Okay.
In Italy, they pronounce it a little differently. But
how do they pronounce it in Italy?
Well, it'd be Cardamone.
Cardamone. Okay. Yeah.
but here I'm good with Cardamone.
Okay, fantastic. great. And so, Cecily, how has support been from local governments and even state government?
Yeah, so, you know, to date, I would say that we have had an incredible group of local governments, so including both the City of Aspen Parks and Open Space, Picken County Open Space, the Healthy Community Fund through Picken County, the Town of Snowmass Village, the Town of Basalt, and participation from Eagle County Open Space. So we have had... we've had both financial and in-kind participation from all of those entities, which has been really remarkable.
That's great. And there's also quite a bit of public support, it seems like, and Tom had referenced it in his column, a survey that went out with 730 respondents and 95% supportive. Could you speak a little bit to that, Tom, or?
Sure. I know we put out inquiries in the paper to ask people to get online and take the survey.
Mm-hmm.
I did that myself early on, and so it was advertised on the radio and the newspapers and on our website, and that probably was maybe the closest to, if not one of the largest surveys in terms of numbers returned, responses, and that 95% of the people all together said at various levels of interest they were behind it. And it's clearly, you drive the highways and you see the roadkill, you'd like to do anything you can to mitigate that, end it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
About how long do you recall was the survey open?
Cecily was handling that.
Yeah. Yeah, James, it was open for 2 months, and we did our best to get the word out. I wouldn't say, I don't know. Picking County Open Space helped us in promoting it. We had all the other nonprofits who are just incredible partners in the Valley. Wilderness Workshop, ACES, EcoFlight, they all promoted it. So we did our best to get, it was in the paper. It was on Aspen Public Radio. So we did our best to get the word out. I think it's always tough to know if you're getting, is this our audience or are we really reaching, a bigger group in the Valley? But it did feel like we stepped outside of just our inner circle and got some great voices. And, people talked about their concerns as well, but I would say it was remarkable to see that 87% felt strongly in favor. And then when you look at strongly in favor and very supportive and supportive, that brought the number up to 95%. So it was a great show of enthusiasm from the community.
It's really quite an accomplishment and says a lot. And I mean, it's definitely an interest out there that people share. Could you tell us a little bit, and I know we don't have a whole lot of time, but a little bit about the surveys, or sorry, not the surveys, the studies, and how y'all have gone about collecting data for those various studies. Tom, do you want to take this one, or Cecily?
Well, I think maybe we both looking at it from different perspectives. In my column, I reference trying to give people a sense of, is this a problem? We see roadkill, but is it significant? And so we did our best to gather information to put a fine pencil to that. What we did discover is that there are various ways people collect information about roadkill, and various educated opinions from wildlife professionals about how much goes undocumented. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of variation. I think at the end of the day, we've all looked at each other and said, we need to collect data with better methodology to be more accurate. But in general, what we found was that the roadkill in Colorado is significant. One way of looking at it, it was more animals killed by cars than by hunters in terms of mule deer. Mm-hmm. And yet I think enough of that data is anecdotal, even from experts, but it's anecdotal that we're saying, let's put a fine point on this and try to understand the numbers. Mm. Regardless, it's thousands, maybe tens of thousands of animals killed every year by cars, and the number of mule deer killed by hunters every year is in the low 30,000s.
Oh, wow.
So it's, those numbers, they're big numbers. Mm-hmm. And we know that wildlife crossings over and under highways can reduce roadkill by 80 or 90%. So that's saving a lot of lives and a lot of property damage, and people are injured as well. So there's a financial incentive behind this as well.
Well, and speaking of saving lives, and just you had also referenced in your column that in the 1850, the world over, that the world biomass, there's 50% was wildlife, and 50% would have been humans?
Humans and their livestock.
So and their livestock.
Cattle and sheep primarily.
Okay.
Right. Try to back away from the immediacy of, yes, our focus is trying to reduce to the maximum amount, reduce roadkill. But what's the bigger picture? And here, the bigger picture that I wanted to convey and continue to convey is that globally, wild vertebrate, wild mammals, and people and their livestock were, if you put them on a scale, they would balance. Mm-hmm. And today, wild mammals are 4%, not 50%.
Yeah, it's astounding.
And we and our livestock are 96%. It's a dramatic, overwhelming of nature. But then I thought to myself, what does it look like in the Roaring Fork watershed?
Yeah.
Having studied the watershed,
right.
Nobody really, in my experience, has tried to figure that out. So I thought, well, I'll do my best. Mm-hmm. And I went to the Census Bureau and the Farm Bureau to figure out how many people and how many cows lived in the valley and what the average weight of us and our cows was.
Yeah.
And I got a number for that. And then I went to wildlife, and you can go to CPW and understand the size of the deer herd and the size of the elk herd and figure out the average weight of each. Mm-hmm. And then with a little bit of magical thinking, I thought, okay, well, there's bears and lions and coyotes and mice and everything in between. I've got to get some numbers for those. So I did my best to come up with those numbers. And even looking at it from several different angles, I kept coming up with 50-50. Mm-hmm. In the environmental world, there's a lot of interest in the notion, which has taken on the title "Nature Needs Half." There are books written about it, and the late E.O. Wilson wrote about that, calling it "Half Earth." And in order for us to survive, we need nature to hold our ecosystems together. So where are we? And I came up with 50-50, doing my best to be accurate. Mm-hmm. I would invite any statisticians out there to give me a call and look at how I came up with my numbers and see how close they were. But it was a revelation to me, mm-hmm. how well we're doing here in terms of the rest of the world.
Right. And so, because we're still at that 50-50 ratio, however, I was thinking in terms of the Roaring Fork Valley specifically, it probably was a higher ratio on the side of wildlife 200 years ago here.
Oh, right. 200 years ago, it would have been less than 1%.
Right.
Humans and no livestock.
Uh-huh.
And so, right, if you go far enough back, we're just a blip on the screen compared to wild mammals.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, well, let's deal with time periods that people are sort of familiar with if they watch old westerns.
Right, and that ratio was just for mammals. That's right.
Just wildlife, for mammals. Right.
Okay.
Right.
Great. And then one other. thank you, Tom. One other. Figure I wanted to ask about, and you said the title of the column is "Wildlife Crossings Make Economic and Ethical Sense." We've covered some of the ethical aspect, but economically, and one figure you had in there was an estimated $10 million worth of vehicle damage or damage between Aspen Pitkin County Airport and Woody Creek in about a decade.
Right.
Can you speak to that?
Right. That was based on the number of elk and deer killed in that stretch over 10 years, which mm-hmm. we have that number. I bumped it up not dramatically, only by maybe 40 or 50%, mm-hmm. assuming, I mean, some suggestions are that you should multiply it by 5. I thought, I'm just going to increase it by 50% to be mm-hmm. very conservative.
Okay.
And we know people have taken the trouble to estimate the cost of an elk collision and the cost of a deer collision at ranging between $25,000 and $75,000. So I applied those numbers and came up with over $10 million.
Well, and it will just destroy a vehicle very often, especially if it's a big elk.
Exactly. And yeah. and occasionally there's a loss of life, and that has mm-hmm. a
right.
very high value. And mm-hmm. I thought it was important to get some perspective on what the economics really were. And then I went to Colorado Department of Commerce, Department of Revenue, and the state, the SCORP report. Now, I'm blanking on exactly what that means, but it's a natural resources report and recreation report, outdoor recreation analysis done by Parks and Wildlife, because okay. they're in both of those worlds. And the SCORP report numbers aligned with Department of Commerce and the Department of Revenue numbers, and were the easiest to understand. That was spending, not taxes or other sources. And so I thought, okay, the all three sources align. The SCORP is the most understandable. And wildlife activities, fishing, hunting, watching wildlife, bird watching, for example, generates more spending in Colorado than the ski industry and the winter sports industry generally, skiing, boarding, snowmobiling, cross-country, everything in between. That was a revelation to me. I was surprised to discover that, but it's in the numbers.
Okay. Well, thank you, Tom. For our listeners, we are just about to wrap up our show. We are going to push into burnout, so I apologize. But Cecily, with our couple of last minutes, is there anything you'd like to add today before we let you go?
No, thank you. Thank you so much for having us on today. We really appreciate it. And I think my you know, the biggest message I have to the community is join us. Like, everybody has different insights when it comes to our priority locations. And I would even go as far as to say that some of the community insights led us to even adding or changing priority locations. So having the Roaring Fork community come to the table, tell us their stories, share their observations, speak to their elected officials, all of these things have really brought together an incredible coalition. And I would say that as we move to do the other prioritization areas, we just really look forward to engaging with new people from the community and sort of a broader part of the valley. So, yeah, no, that's it. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your time. And thank you for joining us on your way to visit family for Thanksgiving. Have a happy Thanksgiving, Cecily. And thank you, Tom, for joining as well. For our listeners, to find out more about Roaring Fork Safe Passages and this important work that they're doing that is clearly supported by our community, you can go to roaringforksafepassages.org. And then make sure you pick up a copy of The Soaperous Sun and flip to page 16, where you'll find Tom's column. And so thank you again, Cecily, and thank you again, Tom. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Thank you.